Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. Hope you're all doing well. My name's Stu Whiffin, I'm your host, and it's another week, therefore it's another podcast episode. And joining me today is former journalist and now Radio X DJ and broadcaster, Gordon Smart. I recorded this one during lockdown, so we done this over the internet, face-to-face via a Zoom call. And it was a great chat. It was the first time I'd had a conversation with Gordon, and hopefully it'll be the first of many more, because by the time you get to this, the end of this podcast, you'll realise that he's a top guy, and we have a really good natter. And well, I'll just say a few thank yous, and then we'll get on to that natter. So just quickly, a huge thank you to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to 76 for producing this podcast. And also, if this is your first podcast that you've listened to of Off the Beaten Track, have a look in the archives, because there's 150 odd episodes where I chat to some amazing musicians, producers, DJs, actors, comedians. Go and have a little rummage in the back catalogue and see if there's anything there that takes your fancy. And if you've already exhausted all of that, then I do also have a Patreon account where each week I put up a standalone episode over there as well. So you can support the podcast by going and checking that out. You can find out about everything that's going on in the world of this podcast by going to offthebeatentrackpodcast.com. Right, let's get on with that chat. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track podcast with Gordon Smart. Sorry to chip in, but I've got another announcement. We have another sponsor. Anyone Can Play Guitar podcast. If you're in a band or an upcoming singer-songwriter, or you just want a little look behind the scenes of how the music business works, this podcast is for you. They interview big-name guests every week, and the lads go in on topics such as how festivals are put together, the role of today's record companies, the importance of touring, marketing, songwriting, the list goes on. And wait till you hear who they've had on. The Killers, Jimmy Eat World, Editors, Frank Turner, Shed 7, as well as loads of record company execs, festival organisers and radio DJs, and loads more. Visit acpgmusic.com or wherever you get your podcasts from. It's the Anyone Can Play Guitar podcast. Go and check it out.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. Me, Stu Whiffin.
Okay, we're recording. Sitting opposite me today from his home, we're in lockdown when we record this one. We're recording this over Zoom. It's Gordon Smart. Hello.
Stu, thank you so much for having me. This has been a long time in the works, so it's taken a global pandemic to get us together.
Oh, do you know what? I'm chasing everyone now because no one's got any excuses now. It's like, what are you doing? Well, I'm really... No, you're not. You're sitting at home. You've got no excuse. So that's what I've been doing. I'm just hounding people now to come and do the podcast. But I appreciate you doing it, mate. I really do.
It's my pleasure.
Gordon, I always start this podcast with the obvious question, which is the song with the greatest ever intro.
Yeah, it has to be. Well, for me, it's quite predictable, really, for a Scotsman who grew up in the 80s and 90s. But Underworld, Born Slippy, NUXX. I think, regardless of wherever you are in the world, whatever you're doing, when you hear the opening bars to that song, the hairs in the back of my neck stand up, and I'm just transported straight back to Edinburgh. And it just makes me feel happy. It makes me feel sad. It makes me feel excited. It's the soundtrack to the greatest nights that I've had in my life. I just love that song and everything it means. The fact that it was on the soundtrack for one of the greatest films ever made, Trainspotting, which I happened to have. I thought it was subconscious. I had that mug today. I've got it in front of me right now, the Trainspotting mug. But it just, it reminds me of such a special time in my life as well, you know, like borrowing my brother's passport so I could use it as fake ID to get into Century 2000 on Lothian Road in Edinburgh and dance like an idiot. I think back to it and it makes me cringe, but also makes me really, really happy and nostalgic and sentimental about growing up in Edinburgh. And I don't know, just everything about it is so special. And it's just a perfect song as well to finish any big night out.
As a club DJ, that's a get out of jail card, that one. The minute them opening bars come in, everyone's hands go in the air. Whatever kind of club you're playing at as well, it's just kind of... And also, I want to just question you on something here. Are you claiming this for Scotland, mate?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
On the strength of... Because I'm from Essex, so I claim Underworld as one of our own. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. He's writing about that train journey to Romford, but on the train spotting tip, you're claiming it.
I think so. Well, I wonder what would happen to that song had it not been on the soundtrack for train spotting. It would have been well known by the likes of you and me because we were... really into clubbing at that point and we loved Underworld, but I don't think it would have had the mass appeal it has without the significance of that film. So I think it's almost become, it's one of those things that's been adopted as Scottish, I think. But you're right, I mean, I remember thinking, I wonder what Romford's like, and then being so disappointed when I went there.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wouldn't rush there, mate.
I remember, like, this song mentions Romford. It also mentions Tottenham Court Road, doesn't it? I think there's a bit about being in the tube in Tottenham Court Road. And that's when he starts... like, every time I go about Tottenham Court Road, I say, lager, lager, lager. So it's one of those things that's just become part of your life. It just means so much to me. And you know what's amazing about it? It doesn't ever seem to age. Do you notice that? Which I think is a real sign of pure class.
But I think if we're talking kind of indie club bangers like that, I mean, I think Born Slippy doesn't sound like anything else Underworld does. And I think there's certain bands that have these songs that don't necessarily sound like the rest of their back catalogue, but haven't ever aged. When I say that, some examples of that are Fool's Gold, like, doesn't sound like anything else the Rosie's done, yet it sounds like it could come out tomorrow and it will be just as key and just as vital. Hassoun Is Now by the Smiths doesn't sound like anything else the Smiths does, but it's just their records that are just out there. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I think songs in Underworld and Scottish films, they're not, I think there might be one in there, Shallow Grave, but there's a song, that Underworld song, Res, I listen to all the time as well. And those two together are just perfect as a partnership for a wild night out. It's like, you know, if I'm going for a big one, I think both those songs will be played before I go out. When I'm out, I'm going to get come when I come home.
Perfect. All right, Gordon, for track two.
Yep.
The first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you.
Right, so to give this some context, I was born in 1980. So I would have been four turning five around the whole Live Aid thing. So Michael Burke's report on the news about Ethiopia, then the subsequent campaign with Bob Geldof, and then the gig at Wembley. But the gig at Wembley was the summer of 85, I think. But the Do They Know It's Christmas was obviously the Christmas of 84. And I just think that's the first time I was aware of a song that was written to raise money to help people who desperately needed it. So the whole situation in Ethiopia was quite a big deal. I remember it being on TV and my parents explaining what it was all about and the reason this song was created, and then actually listening to the lyrics and trying to understand, you know, what would Christmas mean to other people further away in the world. And, you know, obviously I was 4 or 5 years old. But that song, and because it had all those faces that you were beginning to recognise as people from TV and voices you recognise from radio and things that your dad or mum were playing at home on records, it was such a big thing. And it was a brilliant introduction as well to music and musicians, if you think about it. You know, Bono getting to sing his special line, or, you know, Boy George. I remember being totally fascinated by Boy George when I was 4 or 5. I remember asking my mum and dad, is that a boy or is that a girl? You know, And also just the whole spectacle of that Wembley gig with Queen, Paul McCartney making an arse to Let It Be. everything going wrong. And I just remember that being so significant in my childhood. I remember the day that was on TV. I remember the song being performed. I remember it being on the radio all the time. And also, just as a wee boy, understanding the notion of famine and hunger and all of that stuff, and music being a connection to it. So it really was significant.
It's quite strange that you mentioned that, because that's, I guess, it's pretty much mine as well. I'm older than you. I was born in 73, and one of my early memories is sitting there and watching Live Aid with like my folks and my aunt, and seeing them like crying. And it was when Bowie introduces the kind of the montage of Famine, with the car's drive being played behind it, and I remember just, because that song's a heart-wrenching song anyway, hearing just the chord structure of that, and you know, with those, that imagery like on the screen, and just seeing like everyone in the room was just like tears down their eyes, and that was the first time I think, like, just not just the imagery, but just the sound of music as well, just like hit me like, you know, in an emotional way. I think it was and I guess, to this day, Live Aid was an absolute spectacle. But to this day, the one thing that will make my bottom lip go is crowd singing, whether that's a football match or at a gig. When you get people coming together and singing with such passion, it just does me.
God, you got me there just talking about it. Because, you know, I'm 10 weeks into this isolation business, and... Exactly 2 years ago tonight, I got the chance to introduce Noel Gallagher on stage at the Watford Coliseum. And, you know, I'm so sad just thinking it's been 10 weeks since I did my job and 2 years since a night like that. And you talking about that togetherness of a live crowd, it really is magical. And I think a lot of people, that feeling has been crystallised in this time when you're on your own, because you miss it, don't you? And we're in festival time as well, aren't we? Which would normally be the perfect opportunity to go and have those sing-alongs. And you're absolutely right. Every time it gets me. And I happen to support a football team who have probably the greatest football song of all time.
What team do you support?
I'm a Hibernian fan from Edinburgh.
Right. This is amazing, right? So I've got to tell you about this.
Cool.
I don't want to interrupt you, but this is something that I'd never heard before. The band you're about to say are one of my favourite bands. And I had done this podcast with Colin Murray.
Okay.
And he went, "Have you ever seen Hibs fans singing this?" And I was like, "No." Literally, I reckon I watch that every couple of weeks. I'll go on YouTube and watch it just to make me bottom lip go. I don't know why I do it, but yeah. It's beautiful, man. You've obviously been in the crowd for that.
Countless times, yeah. So...
Oh.
Actually, the anniversary of us winning the Scottish Cup for the first time in 102 years is the 21st of May, 2016. So it's coming up in, what are we now? God, day is it? I can't even remember. Yeah, in about 6 days' time. And I was there with my son and my big brother, and we never thought we'd see it. And the song, for those who don't know, is Sunshine on Leith by The Proclaimers. And it's one of the most bittersweet, melancholy, optimistic, uplifting, beautiful songs. And you just, I'm the same as you. I watch it. It's part of the reason my voice is broken, because I've sung it so badly so many times. But it's just beautiful. While the chief puts sunshine on Leith, I will be with you. It's just wonderful, wonderful, wonderful music.
Lovely. So, obviously, we've spoke about the first song that had an emotional impact on you. When you was growing up, was there music on at home? Were your parents into tunes?
Yeah, I was massively fortunate. My dad was a huge music fan. He was the entertainment convener at Edinburgh University when he was there. So he was a medical student. He's a doctor. So he would have been there between 72 and 77, I think. He was studying medicine. And he booked bands like Captain Beefheart and ELO. I think Pink Floyd might even have played Edinburgh Uni when my dad was there. So we had a house full of vinyl. And... I, again, you know, from a very early age, I remember the artwork specifically on his vinyl collection, you know, things like Roxy Music, there's always naked women involved, weren't there?
Yeah.
And I remember the Average White Band album sleeve with a woman's bum on it.
Yeah.
But he just had so, he had loads of brilliant records, and it was always on in the house. So I think my parents were really good about buying us compilation albums as well. So we had the first ever Now That's What I Call Music.
That's the first album I ever owned as well, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. And they really made an effort with us. So, you know, there was this ritual in our house about bath time, and we'd get out the bath and there would be some album on. I mean, I even remember stuff like ABBA playing, and, you know, my dad had a lot of Kate Bush, Fleetwood Mac, Pink Floyd, loads of great stuff to listen to, the Beatles. I remember him being furious because one of us, me and my big brother, had broken his Pink Floyd record, Amagama, I think it was. But he had great music and we were surrounded by it. I remember in the car as well, we were always on long car journeys. And, you know, you'd always have Sound of the 60s or Sound of the 70s on, great compilations. Like Simon and Garfunkel, for some reason, I know all the lyrics to all the Simon and Garfunkel songs. And then you realise it's because it was on in the car all the time.
Yeah.
But again, like the minute a Simon Garfunkel song comes on, I'm immediately transported to be in the back of my dad's Volkswagen Golf singing along to The Boxer. And I'm very grateful because the house was full of music. And weirdly as well, my granddad and his side of the family were really talented musicians. So his brothers were in pipe bands, so brilliant drummers. Actually, this is weird. And I always thought there was a connection, but my granddad was called Harry Marr. So my mum's maiden name is Marr. And Johnny Marr was a relative of mine. And I always thought Johnny Marr looks like my relatives, like dark black hair. There's a resemblance to them. But then I found out years later that his real name is Mayer, M-A-H-E-R, and he changed it to Marr. But anyway, there was a lot of drumming and pipe bands and colliery bands and stuff like that. So I ended up learning to play the trumpet to impress my granddad. And I'm so annoyed now I didn't pick up a guitar. Well, you know, again, there's a lovely story to tell here. My mum and dad were best friends with a couple called Pat and Morag Kelly. And I think I've got to give Pat Kelly a massive shout out because he owned a music shop called Sound Control, which you might have heard of. It ended up being in all the Virgin music shops as the where you buy your musical instruments. So when we were kids, my mum and dad got brilliant instruments from Pat because he happened to own Sound Control. So we had a beautiful upright Yamaha piano when I was growing up. So me and my brother both learned to play the piano. I mean, my big brother's a fantastic pianist. You know, I just didn't have the patience for it, but I can play a little. And Pat Kelly was one of the original roadies for the Skids, the punk band. And then subsequently provided a lot of the kit for Big Country. And off the back of the Skids in Big Country, he had all this equipment that then became his first music shop in Dunfermline and Fife in Scotland. And then he opened one in Edinburgh and one in Glasgow and one in Newcastle. Then there was one in London. And I think there was one in every major city in the country. But there's a great connection there to folk musicians who used to buy from Pat. So, you know, I think he knew the guy who wrote a song called The Kelty Clippy. So when we were kids, there was this rich tapestry of music that we were aware of. And, you know, my dad was interested in bands and artists and people who were doing well. So I remember Fairground Attraction and Eddie Reader and The Proclaimers and Big Country and a lot of Scottish music being played. So I'm very, very grateful to them for being brought up around music.
Wonderful. Well, let's stay in the childhood days, because for track three, Gordon, can you tell me the song that reminds you of your time at school?
Yeah, well, I thought I'd go for high school, right? Because primary school, you're just kind of relying on your parents, really.
Sure.
So high school is when you start to sort of formulate your own musical taste. And again, I'm very lucky. Big brother, Graham, who's 2.5 years old, at school in 1992, I think it was. So it would have been big time grunge. You know, if you think of Nirvana, Pearl Jam were massive, Faith No More, Red Hot Chili Peppers were really big as well. And Smells Like Teen Spirit, I think it came out in 1991 or 92, Nevermind. I think it was the lead single from Nevermind. So every single party I went to when we started high school, everyone was singing Smells Like Teen Spirit. I remember the video being on MTV. Just remember Kurt Cobain and everybody being into it. And this mysterious rock icon, sort of the first big rock star that I was aware of was Kurt Cobain. And people playing it very badly on acoustic guitars at parties.
That would have been me.
that was the song that just takes me straight back to the start of high school.
Do you enjoy school?
Oh yeah, yeah. I loved school. Lucky to a brilliant school and a great place with a really interesting group of. I had brilliant teachers and I had good friends. What more could you want? You know, felt safe. I was really interested in what I was being taught. Loved sport. Loved music. It was great. And again, there were always older kids. I always liked the company of older kids. So I always felt like I was a sponge for stuff they were into. And I'm, again, so grateful because my older brother, he was really into music and his mates were really into music. So they loved the Beastie Boys. I remember the Stone Roses, Smiths. My next door neighbour, Kevin and Benji Edie, their uncle owned a music shop in Perth called Gold Rush Records. So we used to be able to get tickets to gigs. So I remember getting tickets to go and see Oasis really early. Kevin Edie's bedroom was just covered in posters that he'd got from Gold Rush Records. So I remember Animal Nitrate from Suede being on the wall and thinking, wow, that's amazing. And he had all the Silver Tone Records stuff on the wall with great pictures of Jackson Pollock artwork with John Squire and Ian Brown all over it. And I just remember soaking all of this up. And it was great because I didn't have to buy anything because it was there. You know, my next door neighbour had unlimited music. His dad was really into Bob Dylan and all the 70s greats as well. So we're just surrounded by amazing, amazing music all the time. There was another kid I should mention called Ian Watson, who was even older than my brother. And Ian went off to America to sell books as a summer job. And I remember he came back and he's the first person I ever knew who had a record bag. And he came back and we were all listening to, at that time, probably really early on Oasis, a bit of Stone Roses, and he came back with loads of hip-hop. And I remember thinking, what on earth is this? Do you know what I mean? Like probably early sort of Dr. Dre stuff, Snoop yeah. Dogg, Warren G and Regulate. I remember that song specifically. And then there was obviously the East Coast Beastie Boys stuff as well. Yeah. So again, just blowing my mind as this whole new chapter of music opened up. But it's quite hard to explain to younger people. Like, we didn't have the internet, right? Which seems ridiculous. So my connection to music was Select Magazine, NME, and whatever my big brother was telling me about.
Select Magazine, I tell you what, my bedroom wall was absolutely full of them. Because you used to get like sort of 6 or 7 posters, didn't you, in the inside of Select Magazine. And it was great. Like, yeah. It was like, oh, this week there's like posters of the Beasties and PJ Harvey. It was like, it's great. Yeah. What did you want to be at school?
Oh, countless things. So footballer, a doctor. I wanted to be in the army briefly. I wanted to work in languages because I really enjoyed French for some reason for a while. So I always liked the idea of travelling and working in languages. But yeah, my dad was a doctor and I just always assumed I'd do the same as him. But then we set up the school newspaper when I was about 15, a group of us. And then I suddenly realised I had a thing for being a nosy bugger. Journalism was for me. And I think I've told this story a few times, but we discovered our art teacher, Mr. Cowie, was in the original lineup of Wet, Wet, Wet. And I remember finding that fascinating. He had I think it was a Les Paul he sometimes had in the office, in his classroom. And I just remember thinking, this guy was really cool. But for some reason, I was kind of pushed in an academic direction. Like, if I went to school again now, I would do completely different subjects. I was shite at art and wished I was good at it. But I would have probably done sort of modern studies and geography and things like that. But yeah. I got pushed in a science direction. But yeah, I remember when we set up the school newspaper, that was the moment I realised I was probably going to be a journalist. And I was fascinated by, I loved being on stage, but I didn't want to be an actor and I couldn't work out what it was. And then realised I would have loved to have been a radio DJ from an early age, but just didn't see my way into it coming from a small town. So my way in was through journalism.
Was you a confident kid?
Oh yeah, far too confident. Yeah, far too confident for my own good. I mean, there were spells where I just got far too big for my boots and had to get taken down a peg or two. And then you'd have a moment of being a wee bit shy. But across the board, from an early age, yeah, very confident. Yeah.
All right. Track 4, Gordon. First song you remember buying from a record shop?
That was a great question because I really struggled. I'd love to give you a really cool answer, but I can remember a cluster.
Do you know what, Gordon? It's like there's no cool answer for this. It's like if you go too cool, you just—it's bollocks if people go too cool. No one was listening to John Peel when they bought their first record. It just weren't happening. And I'll tell you what—the one of the first people I had on here was Russell from Block Party. And I remember, what's the first record you bought? And I thought, I reckon Russell would have bought a really cool record. And he went, Stiltskin. And I just thought, brilliant. Brilliant. If your first record's Stiltskin, like, that sets the benchmark, then you ain't got to be cool with your first record.
Do you know what? I think Stiltskin might be around about my fourth or fifth buy. But I bought the album based on that one song that was on an advert on TV. Can't remember what
it was. How'd that album work out for you, mate?
Oh, it was a bag of shite. I remember, like, listening to the one song, thinking, that's brilliant, and everything else was dreadful. And resenting the $15.99 and just pays for that. Because albums weren't cheap then. But
no.
I'm pretty sure it was Queen's Greatest Hits 2. And again, to put that into context, it was around, I would have been at high school, probably first year, so about 12 years old. And I think it was the Olympics 92 would have been Barcelona. So Freddie Mercury would have been everywhere with that amazing song. And also, I think Highlander, the film, had come out. And I loved, I don't know why, but I loved that song, Who Wants to Live Forever? The Queen song. And it was something really moving about it. But it was also when CDs first came out, and it was the first thing I could buy on CD that I could play on my dad's new hi-fi. So that was probably the first thing I remember buying. At the same sort of time, just to be totally honest, I think I might have bought a Genesis record as well.
Well, I'll tell you what. Are you aware that the singer from Stiltskin is now the singer in Genesis?
I wasn't aware of that, no.
There you go, mate.
Well, did Phil Collins not announce that he's getting back together with Genesis?
I don't know.
I'm glad you missed that bit of news, but I did see it. So yeah. And again, I probably didn't buy as much music because my big brother was buying stuff. It was just brilliant. It was like having a personal music curator, you know? And it was only when I started getting jobs when I was like 13, 14, collecting glasses and restaurants and stuff that I started buying more music. And I'd go up to Gold Rush Records in Perth and just buy Oasis and Manic Street Preachers and probably Suede. I loved Cooler Shaker and Ocean Colour Scene, Northern Uproar. There's a band from Glasgow called The Gyres. Loads of that stuff when I was about 13, 14, 15.
I remember The Gyres. Yeah. And so, were record shops like a place you liked? Was you a crate digger? Did you like hanging out in them?
Yeah, but, well, my best friend at the time was a guy called Benji Edie. And like I say, it was Benji's uncle who owned Gold Rush Records. I had another mate called Ewan Gowdy, and there wasn't really a great deal to do. So if we went to the nearest big town, which was Perth, nearest city, we'd just have I would go HMV or Our Price, I think it would have been, and Gold Rush, and just look through the records. So yeah, it was probably a bit of a ritual, yeah, because there was nothing else to do.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's move forward a little bit after school, and for track five, the song that soundtracked your year's clubbing.
Yeah, this is a brilliant question as well, because there are two options, right? Because there was two different types of clubbing, right? So I was a nightclub promoter. I used to put on student nights, about 98 to 2001 up in Edinburgh. And so we'd have the sort of cheesy commercial nightclub stuff, which would have, you know, your classic big nightclubs, which will be a total mystery to people growing up now. But you'd have one room that would play total nonsense, and the other room would play sort of mainstream house music, you know?
Yeah.
I remember that song, what was it called? Red Alert. Who did that? That was on all the time. They'll come back to me. But, you know, the cool side of the clubbing that I do around that time was in this brilliant club in Edinburgh called Sublime. And I remember going to see listen to a lot of trance music, which was a pretty wild time. And there'd be like Paul Van Dyke and Darren Emerson. And there was that band, I think they were from Portsmouth or Plymouth, Binary Finery. And there was this, I think it was a Positiva album I had. And that track, Binary Finery, just takes me straight back to sweating in nightclubs downstairs and just being desperate to be able to go to Ibiza and have a summer there, but just never really getting around to it or having the money to do it. So, yeah, that song, I just remember it being sort of 3-4 o'clock in the morning in a throng of sweaty people. And that song had come on. And again, just thinking about it now, the hair stands up in the back of my neck. Amazing.
Lovely.
I put it on this morning before we did this, and I did have a real moment of feeling quite sad about missing. It's 22 years since I was at university. Where's that gone? They were special times, just seeing those DJs in those clubs in Edinburgh and then taking the party on into the fields in the middle of nowhere and just carrying on for days and days, going up to Dundee, seeing some brilliant DJs. I remember seeing Boy George DJing in Edinburgh one New Year, and it was just fantastic, probably 1999. And yeah, they were special times.
Did you get to Ibiza in the end?
Only in the... So it'd be 2002 maybe was my first time in Ibiza. And it was kind of the Ibiza Rocks era. So you were going to see... Mm. Yeah, just around that time, I remember the Streets, seeing them out there. And then Kasabian. And weirdly, like, no guess where I can't remember. It was such a messy time. But there were a lot of BBC Radio 1 Ibiza sort of weekender things going on. So Zane Lowe and a lot of the Radio 1 DJs out there performing. But yeah, I remember like the Kasabian era, 2004, 2005. There was one particular year that was just ridiculous. We had the Mallorca Rocks, Ibiza Rocks, then on to Benny Kassim, and then came back, and I think it was Tina Park. So I went on a week-long bender. And I might have this wrong, but I'm pretty sure I went to Coachella first. And it was like something from a book. I mean, I took it for granted. I wish I could relive that time, because we didn't have any kids, me and my wife. She would come to quite a lot of it. But I was living this ridiculous... People thought we were writing shit and ruining lives for the sun. I was like writing about amazing nights out and gigs and carry on with all these guys. It was brilliant. Special times.
Hello. I've interrupted the podcast again, haven't I? Sorry, it won't take a sec. All I want to say is... The songs that we're talking about in this podcast.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cast. If we can't play them, it's just because of the regulations regarding playing licensed music and such. So if you want to hear the songs, just go over to Spotify and search Off the Beat and Track podcast, and you can listen to all the songs, because I've put playlists up for each of these. If you can't find it on there, I'll send links on all the social media accompanying each episode. So you've just got to press that one button and you can go through and you can enjoy all the songs that our guest picks. Anyway, I'll shut up, get back to the podcast. See you on the other side. So did you have your sort of your indie years clubbing as well? Was there like, you know, was there indie clubs up in Edinburgh and stuff that you was going to?
Yeah, well, there was a brilliant night called Madchester, which used to happen at the Citrus Club in Edinburgh. I used to go to that, which was fantastic. Yeah, like then it was a funny one, because I kind of fell out of love a bit with indie when I went to university, because I felt like we'd had the best years of it. You know, like I felt like Oasis were fizzling out. I think Blur had their best days by 2000, 2001 at that point. And I was really into going to stuff like Sublime and, you know, getting into that kind of club music. But then I had a bit of a resurgence. sort of when Arctic Monkeys and Kasabian kicked off. And when I was in London at that point, like you mentioned it already, this feeling at Mikey John's, that became, I think that was, I'm terrible with dates, I always get it wrong, but I think that was around 2005, 2006. You were doing a night in Hoxton with Matt Horn.
Around about then, yeah.
Yeah, so that 3 or 4 years is a massive blur for me. But I just remember going to loads of brilliant nights, listening to loads of great music. And I mean, I look back in it now and I think there's quite a lot of indie landfill, like Jolene and the Jing Jang Jong and a lot of that kind of stuff. But it's like Jack Pignatti and all those guys. And I tell you who should get a mention is Amy Winehouse as well. Like I remember going around Camden quite a lot in the mid-2000s and the Libertines, who I quite liked on their first, not Libertines, Razorlight and the Libertines, all around those first albums. Like Camden was an exciting place to be.
Yeah.
So I feel quite grateful, quite lucky to be into music at that time as well.
Okay. Well, let's go back to Scotland and for track six, Gordon, favourite song from an artist from your home county?
Home county? Was it? Because I thought that may have been a typo. Did you mean country or county?
It was meant to be county, but if you've gone country, that's cool.
Well, right. Oof. Well, I went country first because I've loved the Gerry Cinnamon Carry On for the last couple of years. Just this mad tribal, like, it reminds me a wee bit of the Oasis excitement when you go and see them live, because it's just unbridled Scottish lunacy. And I love his lyrics. I think he has this laconic writing style, just a really efficient way of telling a story. And that song, Diamonds in the Mud, where he talks about going from the milk, Castle Milk, to the East End. It's the use of Scottish language, unashamedly singing in a Scottish accent as well. You know, like Dancing in the Scud, I think is one of the lines. He talks about flick knives and you can get the sense of the violence of Glasgow, but also the unbridled excitement and madness of the city. It really is. I think he's a magical talent and I love the guy. I think he's brilliant. I love the mystery of him. I love the way he doesn't play the game. I just think everything about him is brilliant. So in the last few years, it's definitely been him. And I also, like, Paolo Nutini, I think, is a hugely underrated songwriter. That song, Iron Sky, again, it stops me in my tracks every time. His vocal delivery on that, I just think he's a huge talent. And I didn't really consider it until recently, but I've seen him a lot. And it's one of those things, I've never really got to know Paolo really well. But we've had a couple of nights where I've been in his company and stuff. And I quite like that because I've only ever seen him as a fan. So I've seen him in the Wilton Music Hall, which is a great venue in East London. Saw him at the Royal Festival Hall. Seen him headline Tea in the Park. I've seen him play in Glasgow. And he went from this really shy performer where he'd almost like hunch over in embarrassment with people looking at him. And then suddenly to see him perform a song like Iron Sky, like this beautiful voice, this good-looking guy. I mean, he's just a phenomenal talent. I cannot wait to see what he does next. I really think he's got an awful lot to offer that boy. So, you know, they're two Scottish artists. But if, you know, if to give it a band from my county, I think Fife's probably... Fife, or I live in Kinross and I come from a place called Kinross, so we're kind of on the border of Fife and Tayside. So to give you two would be Big Hunt, Big Country, growing up as a kid. Stuart Adamson was from Dunfermline and their music meant an awful lot. And The View in Dundee. So, you know, The View are probably the band who have done best from where I come from. And it was quite exciting for me to see them doing really well. I remember the first time I was aware of them, I think Kyle got arrested where he was found in the boot of Pete Doherty's Jaguar driving the wrong way down a one-way street in Dundee at a gig. And I remember thinking, who are these boys? They come from where I come from. And it was exciting to see them doing really well.
So if I'm right, I think we're going to talk about Big Country a bit more towards the end of this, aren't we? So I won't go into that too much. It's really weird. Did you watch the documentary maybe that came out last year on the BBC about Scottish music?
I've seen so many documentaries, I can't remember. Maybe.
It's really interesting. And it's like, and there was a few bands that they sort of touched on in the kind of mid to late 80s from Scotland that sort of almost felt like didn't sing with their own accents. Yeah. And I just wonder what your kind of thoughts are on that.
Yeah, it's funny, it's like Simple Minds were a massive global success and Jim Kerr sang with sort of a transatlantic American accent, didn't he? And then you've got Edwin Collins and Orange Juice, I suppose, who are a massive, massive band. And Edwin Collins is a genius. And I mean, I think about his solo stuff, like Ever Met a Girl Like You Before, where he was like crooning, kind of like an Elvis impersonator in a way. But I haven't got a problem with that at all. I mean, I totally get it. And, you know, if you grow up listening to a certain style of music, you will deliver it in a certain way. But yeah, it's funny to hear, like, Paolo, you can hear his Scottish accent, The View, you can hear the Dundonian in there, Jerry, unashamedly Scottish, Biffy Clyro, of course, you know, there's, it's so clearly Scottish, Frightened Rabbit, which is for doing something because I can't do it. Right?
Yeah.
I just wish I could perform at a level like that and write a song. But yeah, I haven't got an issue with it at all.
Yeah, yeah. It's really strange. I think they were talking about Wet, Wet, Wet at the time. And then I think they just cut to like a shot of like Las Vegas or the Proclaimers. And it was just so stark, the difference in the delivery, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's get on to the last track, Gordon, which is a song that many may not know that you would like them to hear. And so it's your chance to play DJ again.
Yeah, I think I chose Big Country in the song Restless Natives. Is that right? Yeah. Sorry, I forgot. Yeah, so Big Country, again, I mentioned them earlier on in this conversation about Pat Kelly, the family friend who had worked with Big Country way back in the day. And I think he might have roadied for them. But Stuart Adamson was just an amazing talent. I think a troubled soul as well. And it's funny how over the years doing my job interviewing big bands, I didn't realise how much of an influence he was on other guitarists. So remember Johnny Buckland from Coldplay talking about how much he admired Stuart Adamson. You know, he could make his guitar sound like bagpipes, excuse me, which sounds massively unappealing. But actually, when you listen to this song, Restless Natives, there's something, again, that takes me straight back to my childhood. So Stuart Adamson and Big Country wrote the soundtrack to this film called Restless Natives, which it's such a big part of my childhood. It's a beautiful story around the same sort of time as Gregory's Girl in those Scottish films, or Local Hero. And it was about these two lads who worked in a joke shop, and they would put on a clown mask and a wolf mask and go up on a motorbike into the Highlands and rob tour buses. And I named my company after them, because I just loved that romantic notion of that story. But the musicianship and the guitar and just the eerie sort of soundtrack to Scotland in the mid-80s, it just takes me back to that time. I even can elicit the smells of where my grandparents lived. So, you know, my gran and granddad lived in a place called Lahore, which was a mining village in West Fife. And if you think around the time that film was made, it was Thatcher's Britain, you know, the Tory government. It was, I think, poll tax was about to be tested out in the Scots. There was a lot of political unrest. There was a lot of anger in Scotland. You know, the miners' strikes had just happened. And I just think that music reminds me of 80s Scotland. And I was too young to understand it all. But again, it just takes me back to another time. And I think that's the beauty of music. And also, Stuart Adamson was just this fascinating character to me, this guy who's recognised as a world-class talent from the same place I grew up. And it was
he was in the Skids as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was in the guitarist in the Skids with Ricky Jobson. Mm. And then he became Big Country. But I didn't truly understand how big the band was until I moved to London and met all these music industry people. So there's a guy called Alan Edwards, who's a big-time music publicist, and he worked with Bowie and Elton John. He's, you know, a proper rock and roll, right in amongst it, you know, from the early 80s, you know, he's involved in the punk scene and all that. And I remember one day he brought up Big Country and I said, oh yeah, I've got a bit of a connection. My father-in-law, weirdly, was really good friends with Stuart Adamson. And a few weeks later, he brought me these pictures of him playing football at East End Park in Dunfermline with Stuart Adamson. And he was their publicist. He was Big Country's publicist. And he was like, oh, they were huge. They were absolutely huge. You know, like a world tour. You know, they played all around all the biggest venues I could have imagined. And I didn't quite appreciate that until I was a bit older. And then, you know, you obviously start looking into the Skids and, you know, the history of Scottish punk music and bands like The Exploited that came from that. And then that brilliant punk movement that came afterwards. So I think, God, you would have had, there were bands like Goodbye, Mr. Mackenzie, and a really vibrant Scottish music scene.
That was Shirley Manson's first band, wasn't it?
Exactly, yeah, Shirley Manson. Yeah. And there's a guy, actually, who played in Goodbye, Mr. McKenzie called Big John Duncan. And John Duncan was a roadie for Nirvana and sometimes stood in playing for Kurt towards the end of his life. So there's this mad connection with Nirvana and Scottish punk. I think one of Kurt Cobain's...
Well, they loved Teenage Fan Club as well, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah, Teenage Fan Club. I think Kurt Cobain, one of his favourite bands was The Exploited. Noel Gallagher as well, absolutely loved The Exploited. Big John played in that band. So it was really interesting when I started piecing together the influence of the Skids and all the Edinburgh punk bands and the part they had played and all these famous bands. So, knowing Scottish musicians just blew my mind when I was a teenager. Yeah.
But I remember, like, being that much older than you, I remember, like, just how big country were. And it's so weird because a lot of people that, if I mentioned the film Rest of the Saints, probably wouldn't know that film. But for me, I remember hearing Look Away as a kid and seeing a video of these kids with the clown masks on, like, on a motorbike and just thinking, I need to see this film.
Yeah.
And then when they put it on, I think it was on Channel 4 one, I remember just VHS recording it. And I watched it over and over and over again. And yeah, I mean, Big Country, like, I think, you know, for a good couple of years, were probably shoulder to shoulder with, like, your U2s and Simple Minds at that point. They were a big deal.
Yeah, it's incredible to consider that, isn't it? And I would urge anybody to go and check out the film. About 3 years ago, and I watched it with my son recently, and I was horrified by some of the casual racism in it. It's like,
oh, really?
You don't realize how much, yeah, just little things, but you're like, Christ, you'd never ever dream of that now. But that is one of my dreams in life, would be to remake Restless Natives with a modern version of that story and get a band like Arctic Monkeys to re-record or reimagine the soundtrack. Could be so special.
That'd be great. What a good idea.
I'd love to do it.
Okay, so when lockdown's done, Gordon, what's happening? What are you up to?
Desperate to get this operation so I can get back onto Radio X. And I'm trying to be as positive as I can, right? So I'm hoping that when we eventually emerge from this, there's just going to be a huge flurry of amazing new music coming out. So hopefully on Radio X, not just on my show, but across all radio and what you're doing as well, we're just going to have this massively rich scene of creativity to talk about, loads of great interviews to do with loads of bands, with plenty to talk about. And then on top of that, eventually, when we can all have our arms around each other's shoulders in a field, I don't care what the weather's like, I'll never moan again about being sunburnt or muddy, just so we can all be together singing at the top of our lungs. Although I'll have to be slightly careful I don't knacker my voice next time I do that, but I just can't wait for the next time we're at a festival together or a massive gig.
Wonderful. Gordon, thank you so much for giving up your time today, mate. Really appreciate it.
Mate, it's just such an honour to be asked to come on here, Stu. I've seen who you've had on, some of the guests, so it's a pleasure to be involved. And just listen, keep up the good work, and maybe I could come on again in a year when I've completely changed my mind about every single thing I've told you there.
Well, what I do is if guests want to come back on, then I get them back on to talk about the same sort of structure of questions, but it's all based on gigs, first gigs, the first gig that affected you and things like that. So give that a bit of thought, mate.
Let's
and we'll
do
chat gigs next time.
Nice.
Lovely.
Let's do it. Take
Thanks,
care,
mate. There you go. I never thought I'd be talking about the film Restless Natives on this podcast, and it was a joy to do so. What a great film. Go and see if you can find it. I can't recommend that movie enough. Thanks loads to Gordon. What a top lad. Had a really good chat. And yeah, hopefully when all this craziness of quarantine and lockdown is all a long forgotten thing, then hopefully we'll get Gordon back on and do a live gig special with him. But yeah, so thanks ever so much for listening, people. And I'll be back next week. And if you can't wait that long, have a root around in the vaults of this podcast or head over to the Patreon page, because there's over 100 episodes over there as well. So you can find out about all of this on offthebeatentrackpodcast.com. Right, I'll see you next time. Stay safe. Bye-bye. I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing. www.sosclothing.co.uk. Why am I telling you this? Because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year. And they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music. And they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All of the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. In addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fair Wear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So go and check them out because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk, do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, and then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15, BEAT15, and that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk, official sponsors of Off The Beaten Track podcast.
It's Off The Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.